Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Hello, welcome to Inside the Huddle, our midweek chat about all things NFL. We've got so much to talk about this week, so I'm very pleased to be joined by two gentlemen who've been absolutely smashing it in our studios on a Sunday night. Former NFL defensive coordinator Rob Ryan, former NFL defensive back Solomon Wilcox. Jeff Rimebold will be with us in parts two and three, but very pleased to be joined right now by one of the greatest offensive linemen in NFL history, the greatest player in Jacksonville Jaguars history, and a radio commentator for Westwood One, Tony Boselli. Tony, thanks for joining us on Sky Sports. First of all, your thoughts on week two. There were so many close games around the league this week.
Oh, it's a great start to the season. A lot of exciting games, and I'm probably a little bit skewed and biased with the 2-0 start of the Jaguars. It makes everything seem really good. But for the most part, I think it's been enjoyable. Some interesting, you know, calls with the new rule changes as far as the helmet rule, how they're interpreting refereeing. The passer came into play in the Packers-Vikings game. So a lot of drama, some good drama, some drama that you don't want because it's caused by questionable calls.
Yeah, so 12 of the 16 games, Solomon, were decided by one score. There were 114 touchdown passes through the first 2 weeks of the season. It's the most in NFL history. I mean, it's been an exciting start to the year.
It has, and offensive coordinators and some of the talented quarterbacks, they're challenging NFL defenses. They understand that they can throw the ball in the middle of the field with impunity. You can't hit receivers the way that we used to. You have to be more safety conscious. You don't want to get that dreaded penalty. And offensive coordinators, I think, are designing plays and asking the quarterback, go ahead and throw it in harm's way because the player is no longer in harm's way.
As we go through the next hour here on Sky Sports, Rob, we'll talk about some of the big stories, but there are stories that surprise us. That's the beauty of every NFL season.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, every year is different. Like, you're talking about all this passing and things. I mean, you almost look at now, back in the day, it used to be you throw the ball 30 times a game. Now they're throwing it 50, 55 times a game, and it's every week. So the game's changed right in front of our eyes, but it's still every game's coming down to the wire, and it's still, you know, just incredible to watch, you know, how games are finishing and things like that.
One of the big stories, of course, from week two in the NFL was the New England Patriots going down to Jacksonville in a repeat of the AFC Championship game. And Tony, the Jags knocked them out. The Jags won 31-20. Your thoughts on this win? Was it a statement win? Was it a changing of the guard win?
Well, it was a great win, but you got to be careful. It's only week two. And I think I think the coaches, the players, I mean, it was obviously a great atmosphere and very exciting, but we, you know, a lot of people talking about it close to the team is like, you know, it'd be a great win. It'll be good, but you're 2-0 and nothing changes. You still have a long way to go. And if you lose, you're 1-1 and not a lot changes as well. But I think what the other way we looked at it, or at least I looked at it, I expected the Jaguars to win. They're the better team. They have the better roster at every position except for one, and that's quarterback. Now, Tom Brady can overcome a lot. But if you just look at the rosters up and down, I mean, the Jaguars are one of the most talented in the NFL. They're better than the Patriots, as I said. And if Blake Bortles is going to play the way he has at the end of last year and the start of this year, they're going to be a very tough team to beat.
Tony Solomon Wilcox here. I think you're absolutely right. I expected the Jaguars to win this game. I do agree with you that they are the better team. I think the one takeaway is kind of help us to understand the growth and the development of the quarterback Blake Bortles, because the way that he played, I think that allows people to look at this team differently. He's not the liability. I mean, he played phenomenally well. In fact, he outplayed Tom Brady.
Yeah, I think if you look at the progression last year, you know, he had a terrible preseason, and I give Doug Marrone and Nathaniel Hackett, the offensive coordinator, a ton of credit, and they basically protected him for the first half of the season. And they said, we're going to run the ball. We're going to limit what he can, how he can help us or hurt us, for that matter, and play great defense, field position football. And then they allowed him to get his confidence back because his confidence was shot from the year before. And he worked through it and got through it. And by the second half of the year, he started playing better and better football. They trusted him more and more. And then you get into the playoffs, and everyone wants to point to that Buffalo game where, you know, no one did much. That was purposeful by this coaching staff. They said there's not a chance Buffalo can score points against us. And so we're going to be so conservative. And it almost came back to bite them. And then they opened it up against Pittsburgh, and you look at what Blake did in that game, and it's continued this year. He's a good quarterback. It's never going to look perfect with him, but if you really watch the tape and what he does, how he extends plays with his legs, how he works the pocket, his toughness, his durability, and he's throwing the ball accurately now. It's not always the tightest spiral, but that's okay. It gets there. It's on time, and I think I'm not going to say he's a top five quarterback or anything like that, but I'll tell you what, he is – a guy who's in my opinion, the upper half of quarterbacks in this league, and you can definitely win a Super Bowl with them, especially when you have a defense that the Jaguars have.
Yeah, Bortles, 29 of 45, 377 yards, 4 touchdowns. He did it with his legs as well, as Tony said. 6 runs, 35 yards, some key runs in the game. Let's hear from Blake Bortles and Jaguars head coach Doug Marrone.
We kind of lose sight of what he can do with his feet. You know, I think that he made some really good throws today. Thought he played with a lot of confidence. And, you know, he knows and understands that he has to do that every week. Tomorrow he's going to have to come back and start working because he'll be evaluated each Sunday, you know, and he understands that. And but, again, he did a nice job today.
We thought that, you know, if we played the way that we practiced all week and executed the game plan and didn't hurt ourselves or do anything stupid, that, you know, we'd be doing what we're doing now. I try to do whatever I can to, you know, make sure we can win. If it's throwing for 300 yards or if it's getting us in the right run game checks or whatever it might be, it was definitely, you know, good for the most part today.
I've never really looked at it like that as far as beating Tom Brady. You know, I don't play against him. We play against their defense and he plays against ours. But, you know, it'll, you know, for sure be cool. You know, he's a no-doubt Hall of Famer to say that on this day we beat Tom Brady.
Yes, so Blake Bortles and the Jags celebrating a big win without Leonard Fournette at running back. Rob, were they more expansive as an attack? Was it a glimpse of a potential future for the Jags without Fournette? Obviously, you want Fournette in there, but it seemed like the ball was spread around a lot more. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought they did an amazing job, especially on first down. Mm. I think it's critical to stay ahead of the sticks, and they did a phenomenal job. I mean, mixing in all those passes early. I mean, he was back there for hour and a half to throw the football. I think this team has the most physical lines in football, both offense and defensive lines, and they make a difference. The most physical teams win in the National Football League.
Yeah, hard to move bodies off the front of that line of scrimmage. And I said going in, I thought the Jaguars' offensive line was the most improved area on the football team. And boy, did they. I thought adding Andrew Norwell into the middle of that offensive line, it allows them to move bodies. The two running backs that came in, Corey Grant, TJ Yeldon, they played great. They caught the ball out of the backfield. They extended drives, converted on third down. Mm. This was a complete team win. What I loved about it, and Tony talked about it as well, they don't look at the quarterback as a liability anymore. Mm. He has stepped up and has become a leader of this football team.
Tony, tell us about the impact of Doug Marrone as head coach and Tom Coughlin as well, and those two working kind of in lockstep. Because when Coach Marrone was announced, it wasn't like a Sean McVay or a Kyle Shanahan. It wasn't seen as one of those sexy picks. But what has he done for the Jags?
Well, I think it was the right pick because of, you know, how the roster was built up until he became head coach. I mean, they had built that defense to be pretty dang good. And, you know, the type of quarterback Blake was, especially at that time. And so they needed to be tough, hard-nosed, run the ball, play great defense. And that's who Doug Marrone is. I mean, former offensive lineman, came up as an offensive line coach, no-nonsense guy. And then I think pairing him with Tom Coughlin, I mean, they're similar in a lot of ways, and just their philosophy of how you coach football and kind of how you win a football game is very similar. And so Doug's done a great job. I think the whole front office of the Jaguars have done a great job. And I think what Tom has added is just the credibility and the accountability. If you've ever been around Tom Coughlin, and I played a long time for him, there's just and there's certain people that have this. It's a presence about them. You know, it goes to the fact of who he is. It's the Super Bowls that he's won and just how demanding he is of himself and everybody else. That him being in the building kind of changed the mindset a little bit. And it really became football first on that side of the building. And let's take care of business and we need to win some games. And this is how we're going to do it. So I think it's a combination of a lot of things. And let's not forget, Dave Caldwell, before Tom or Doug got there, when Gus Bradley was the head coach, did a great job. They kind of tore this thing down to the very, you know, to the studs. I mean, just base. And they did a great job of building it up, taking their time, taking their lumps, hitting in the draft, a number of positions, and then really hitting in free agency. So give, yeah, I mean, Doug's done a great job. Tom is instrumental in this whole thing, but Dave Caldwell also is an important piece.
Gus Bradley was a player's coach. Solomon, he was a very popular figure there in the locker room, and they had table tennis tables in the locker room.
Yeah.
That all went really quickly. Well, it all went really quickly.
Tony talks about Tom Coughlin now. Remember, Tony was drafted by Tom Coughlin. He played for... Now, this guy is like that great professor you have in college. When you're playing for him, you don't like him very much, but he's such a difference maker in your career, you end up having to go back and thank
Tony's
him.
Tony's nodding along, yeah.
You have to go back and thank him for what he did for you. But when you're going through it, it's not easy, but boy, does he get results.
Tony, just remind us when
I wanted to kill him.
Exactly. I bet.
Tony, just remind us, when you played for Tom Coughlin, we pick up new viewers all the time here on Sky Sports. Some of the team rules that he had for you guys that were quite strict.
I mean, you had to have, feet on the ground, looking forward, no hats. On the road, it's coat and tie. It's, 5 minutes early. No white socks for whatever reason on the road. I had to wear leather shoes, no sandal, no T-shirts on the road. I mean, it's crazy. I can go down the list. But you had to have, your own little, cheat sheet to make sure you knew all the rules, what was going on. But the one thing...
Hey, but Tony...
The
one thing about him... you're going to be a tough football team.
Yes.
You're going to be a smart football team. You're going to be a disciplined football team. And he wins. He gets results everywhere he goes.
You know what was best about him? And I think any player will tell you this. I mean, you don't have to love your head coach. You don't have to be friends with them. You have to respect them. And the one thing I wanted as a player, or a couple things, I wanted to be coaching. I wanted to get better. And then two, I just wanted to know what the expectations were, and I didn't want them to change on a daily basis. And Tom Coughlin, if he's nothing, he is consistent. Yeah. So every day you showed up to work, you knew what to expect, you knew where to be, you knew how he was going to be. He was going to be hard, he was going to grind you. There wasn't going to be a lot of jokes, but it was the same every day. Win, lose, draw, he was going to treat you the same way, and the expectations were going to be the same. And I think that was good for as a player. There was never any questions. I knew exactly where I needed to be at all times and what I was supposed to do.
Now, Tony's going to be heading to Cleveland on Thursday night to call his American radio coverage. But there won't be a Browns team with Josh Gordon. This was the other big news breaking this week. So the Browns have traded Josh Gordon, the wide receiver, to the New England Patriots, a fifth-round draft pick. So, first of all, Rob, let's start with this. Why the Patriots made this move?
Well, I think they're begging for a receiver with some speed right now. I mean, that when you looked at that game right there, They could stay in post safety defense the whole game. They were taking Gronkowski away in various ways of double coverage, and nobody could beat anybody to get open. I mean, right now, after 2 weeks, the Patriots have completed 3 passes on third down to get first downs, only 1 to a receiver. So that's like Ripley's right there, and it's true. Mm. They are begging for players. This guy here comes in. They've had 28 receivers in camp, I think, and they just keep moving on them.
Yep.
This is a big-time guy if he's there and available. I mean, that's going to be the biggest question.
Solomon, he missed all of 2015, all of 2016 with off-the-field issues, which have been very well documented.
But it's like what Tony said about Tom Coughlin and all the teams where he's coached. Bill Belichick's the same thing. You know what to expect. You know what the demands are. You know what the expectations are. There will not be any gray areas in that building for Josh Gordon. He either is going to walk the straight line or he's going to be gone. And really what they need from him is that deep threat to lift coverage with Julian Edelman, Chris Hogan,
just the threat
Rob
of it, right?
Gronkowski, where they can work underneath. Mm. You saw in that game, the defensive backs, the linebackers, they were sitting on every route. No one was going to run by that Jaguar defense, trust me.
Yeah.
Now, Josh Gordon, I remember him putting up about 200 yards on the Jaguars' defense in 2013. And so he's that good of a player.
Yeah, Josh Gordon's played in just 11 games in the last 4 and a bit seasons. But back in 2013, he had 1,646 receiving yards, 18.9 average. Tony, is this why people still want to take a chance on a guy who was kicked out of college and now has effectively been kicked out of the Cleveland Browns?
I'll tell you what, talent will get you a lot of opportunities. And listen, not everybody's treated the same in this world, and especially in the NFL. The better you are, the bit more chances you get, and this guy's really talented. And that's why, you know, he's getting a lot of different opportunities, a bunch of chances. And here's the other thing. Every coach thinks he can change a guy, typically. And so Bill Belichick's saying, listen, let's take a shot at it. We need something. I mean, it makes you go think back to the offseason. Why did they ever get rid of or trade Brandon Cooks? Rob's exactly right. They got nobody who can stretch the field. It's very difficult for them to create separation. It allows you to double Gronk. And they need somebody, especially until Edelman gets back. They need something to create a little bit of fear in these defenses, because right now there's zero when it comes outside. The biggest threat is, I mean, you have Gronk, but then James White out of the backfield probably scares next more than anything.
It feels like when you look at the kind of prognosticators who are saying, how's he going to do? How's Josh Gordon going to do? And it's either he's going to be gone in 2 weeks or he's going to be the next Randy Moss, because, of course, Belichick got Randy Moss off the Raiders for a fourth rounder. So Belichick has done this before. How do you see this playing out? Do you think Josh Gordon is going to succeed in New England? What do you think is going to happen, Rob?
I tell you what, I hope he does, because that means he's playing football and he's keeping his head on straight. And for that young man, I mean, that's more important than playing, you know, than the game and all that, is just staying, you know, on the straight and narrow. But talent-wise, this guy's fantastic. I think if he can go half of as good as Randy Moss did his that one season, he'd still be a 1,000-yard receiver. So I think that I like their chances to get, a few weeks out of him, and I just hope the young man can stay straight.
I've met him. I've covered him in games. I've talked to him in production meetings. He's a very pleasant young man. I mean, and by all accounts, when the coaches talk about him, as long as he's in the building, he's always been well-studied, work hard, he plays hard. And Tony was right. Where there's high level of productivity, there's high level of tolerance.
Right.
And trust me, he's had the productivity. He has the talent. Now he's just really need to be a better person when he's not in the building. He needs to do better in life. If he does that, we know he's a good football player. Just has to be a better person, make better decisions.
Tony, just quickly, we're wrapping up our part here. Success or failure when we look back at Josh Gordon in New England?
Well, first of all, it's not really, I understand the comparison to Randy Moss, but Randy Moss never had any real issues off the field. It was a different situation. This one scares me because, the poor guy has some real issues. So I'm just rooting for him to be successful and healthy in life. And I'm rooting that way because if he does that, he'll be a great football player. That's the easy part for him. And so I just hope off the field he can make good decisions and he has a kind of a healthy life moving forward, and that football will take care of itself.
Yeah, here, absolutely. One problem, he's got Gordon 12 tattooed on his back. I think there's a guy who already wears 12 in England. Well, he's not getting that jersey. He's not getting that one.
Excellent point.
All right, our thanks to Tony Boselli. Thanks for joining us, Tony.
Anytime.
All right, great to hear from Tony Boselli. Rob Ryan, Solomon Wilcott's going to stay here. We're going to be joined by Jeff Reinbold after this quick break. We'll be back soon on Inside the Huddle.
NFL Challenge is a fun, easy game you can play with your friends and family to follow the excitement of the NFL season. First of all, register to play. Then, each week, pick the NFL team you want to represent you in each of the following positions: passing offense, rushing offense, defense, and special teams. Plus, choose one of the NFL's biggest stars each week to be your team's quarterback, running back, and wide receiver, and designate one of them to be your captain each week to score you double points. But you'll have to plan carefully, as you can only select a team position or player 5 times in a season. You'll score points as your team gains yards, scores touchdowns, defends, and kicks. There's also points for sacks, safeties, as well as minus points for interceptions and fumbles. All the way through the NFL season, you'll be able to pit your wits against your friends and family that you can invite into private leagues or take on other NFL fans in the UK. Head to nflchallenge.skysports.com to register to play and create your team.
Yes, should you wish to fill your team with members of the New York Jets or the Cleveland Browns? Not sure why you would, but if you do, that's up to you. That game is Thursday night into Friday morning. Sky Sports action, 12:30 a.m. And a reminder, we'll be back next Wednesday, 9 p.m. on Sky Sports action for more Inside the Huddle chat. So make sure you join us for that. Okay, so there have been so many headlines already in the NFL this season, including the Pittsburgh Steelers off to their worst start since 2013. Let's bring in my regular podcast and Inside the Huddle partner, Jeff Reinbold. We're going to talk Steelers in a second. I don't know where to start. Probably just best list this out. So Le'Veon Bell, the star running back, has still not signed his franchise tender. He's not playing. He's holding out. The offensive linemen were firing shots at Le'Veon Bell. Antonio Brown, the star wide receiver, gets into an argument with the offensive coordinator in week two. But go back a bit. In training camp, Antonio Brown takes to Twitter and calls a reporter from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette a clown. Last week, he says he's going to test the jaw of an ESPN reporter who wrote some negative stuff about him. On Monday, he was responding to a tweet from a former Steelers PR guy saying that it's all about Big Ben in Pittsburgh. He said, well, then trade me and let's find out. And then on Monday, he doesn't turn up for work. So this, Jeff, well, I mean, it's just not... Forget about the record, all that other stuff I listed. There's dysfunction. It's not quite, you know, it's all over the place in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously it's disconcerting to hear a player, you know, getting so involved in, you know, the social media thing is a double-edged sword, Neil. And you know, you're never going to win with the media, ever, right? So, again, Antonio Brown, in my opinion, has never been that kind of guy. He's obviously something's upsetting him inside of what's going on that we don't know about. And I think, you know, like Coach Tomlin said, he just has to refocus and understand he's here to play football, not to, you know, joust with the media over, you know, stuff that's so trivial, really.
Sully, I know the answer to this question. You don't trade Antonio Brown.
No.
But then you don't trade Khalil Mack, and you probably shouldn't have traded Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, never say never in the NFL, but as Jeff said, clearly something's got his goat because he's getting straight onto Twitter and replying to a lot of this stuff that he probably should be ignoring.
First of all, those teams that did trade those players you mentioned, they're not doing so good.
Right. That's a fair point.
And in all fairness to Antonio Brown, you know, after hearing that, which I think he should have maybe restrained himself a little bit, he said, well, trade me then. It was really, he didn't volunteer, hey, I want to be traded. He never said that. To put it into context, he says, well, if that's the case, then trade me, you know. But he doesn't mean that. And I think the coach and the team understands that. But it's just one more log on the fire that continues to burn. And when you are winless at this point in the season, that little spark can turn into a flame. That flame can turn into an inferno. Mm. And you got to be very careful. And so I think that's what Mike Tomlin, that's where the leadership of a coach now, it all comes in. And I think that's what you saw him mentioning because not showing up for work the day after a game, that's when it starts to go too far.
Well, let's hear from Mike Tomlin because, again, his press conference, once news broke that Antonio Brown didn't turn up for work on Monday, it became kind of a must-see event. Let's hear from Mike Tomlin. First, he was asked about Antonio Brown's activities on social media.
I'm not going to openly talk about a lot of things that occur in social media. You could be chasing that always. I will say this, it's important that we understand our position, the light that shined on us and the responsibility that comes with it. There's been a couple of instances now where you've asked me about Antonio regarding some social media-like things. I'll address that and address that very directly with him, but I'll leave that between he and I. I'm not going to utilize this forum to address such things. I just don't believe it's appropriate.
Mike, was he here yesterday?
He was not. No, I'm looking forward to visiting with him today and discussing that and some other things. I'm not going to get into the details of why he wasn't here or whether he was excused and all of those things. I just assume leave those things in-house. I understand sometimes you got some negativity. You know, we lost a football game. There were some negative exchanges on the sideline. There's frustration associated with not playing well and not winning. I understand all that. There's opportunities for us to respond to it, particularly the early portions of the year. To utilize negative experiences and things that occur to educate our team at this point in the journey so that it becomes a non-factor as we move forward. That's generally the approach that we take in non-football related things such as social media, decorum, and et cetera. So hopefully that'll be the last time I'll be discussing things such as that in this setting.
Mike, is Antonio asked to be traded?
No.
That last question there was, did Antonio ask to be traded? Now, Rob, from a coaching point of view, Mike Tomlin should be worrying about the fact his defence couldn't slow Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs last week. He should be worrying about all the turnovers they had at Cleveland in week one. As Solomon said, it's another log on the fire. This is a headache that he particularly wouldn't have... You just don't need it, do you, with this?
No. Well, I mean, no coach wants distractions other than the game itself. You know, let's play the game and things like that. These distractions, no one needs them. Right now, you haven't won a game this season. You need to dig in your foxhole, come out fighting together, which is what this is. This is a team sport. This isn't anything about individuals. This is a team. And that's what he is focused on. These other things, however, you know, boring they are, and you just hate to deal with them, make a quick statement like he was. That was a tremendous statement, you know, on Tomlin's part, to just sweep it all on a rug. And he's dealt with it, and he's moving on. Trust me, that team has got to get focused on football, and that's all they care about.
Jeff, they're not fighting out of the foxhole in the same direction, though. Ramon Foster's taking shots at Le'Veon Bell, and a couple of years back, Antonio Brown kind of got in the way of what Le'Veon Bell was going to get paid. I mean, there's been a bit of infighting here. For a team that's so established and so successful, there's been some of that, hasn't there, fans?
I'm going to take issue with one thing that Mike said, is that non-football related things. Well, everything's football related because it affects your locker room. And whether it's missing practice, which certainly is football related, or the comments that Alejandro Villanueva said, nobody in the offensive lines losing sleep over Le'Veon Bell not being there. All of those things are things that, as Rob pointed out, are distractions, and those directly affect football because they affect your preparation and your focus. And I think that this is a situation where the Steelers have got to get this thing, and Solly hit it on the head. Now's where you find out about the leadership at the head, you know, in the head coaching position. Not, you know, not the cliches that you can speak in, not how well you stand and do your press conferences, but can you get your football team united and coming to play? Because, you know, again, we all know what the percentages of teams that have lost the first 2 weeks or are 1-0 in the first 2 weeks of getting to the Super Bowl, and they're not good.
I guess the trick, fellas, here in the studio, you can say you're going to talk to Antonio Brown, but you've got to hope he's going to listen as well, because he had the thing a couple of years ago where Facebook lived after a playoff win. So Mike Tomlin absolutely said the right stuff, and you said it, Solly. He's a great communicator. Mm-hmm. He really gets a great message across, but you've got to hope that the player's listening as well.
The message really is, I think, where the really good and great NFL coaches set themselves apart is the ability to really get players to buy into their message, to move them off of where they're at and say, let's put your own individual ideals of how you want to play this game aside for what the team is about. Bill Parcells could do that. Mm. Bill Belichick could do that. We could go down the list of great coaches. They could all do that.
Right.
I think this is a test for Mike Tomlin because his quarterback isn't the problem here. I mean, Ben's lighting it up. Mm. This offense is putting the ball in the end zone. And I don't really understand the complaints that Antonio Brown have right now.
All right, let's settle some Steelers' nerves. So by the end of the season, Antonio Brown on the Steelers roster, Jeff, yes or no?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
All right. I'll say yes as well. Why not? Go with it. I'd love to say no now, just to sort of, but I don't think I've got time to build the argument. I have got an argument for Player of the Week, though. Let's make our choices for Player of the Week. I'd just like to say, last week, Rob challenged me to pick a defensive player at least once.
Yes, I did.
I have a defensive player, but I'm not going to go first. Solly, your Player of the Week for Week 2.
Well, I think if you're playing against that Pittsburgh Steeler defense, you're going to be Player of the Week. Because Patrick Mahomes, played lights out. This guy looked like a 10-year vet out there. And that secondary, you know, Pittsburgh, their identity has always been about the defense. Mm. Well, this doesn't look like a defense that we're accustomed to seeing in Pittsburgh. The Steel City. Oh, Patrick Mahomes was my Player of the Week.
Mahomes is so good that we're now saying Deshaun who? Remember Deshaun Watson last year was the quarterback du jour. Jeff, for you, Player of Week 2?
I'm going to take Fitz because here he goes against Super Bowl champions. And what's he do? He lights them up. And then on top of it, Neil, he gets bonus points for how he appeared at the press conference after the game.
There we go. Wrong. All right, Rob, for you, who are you picking?
Well, I'm going with the only kicker that could actually make a game-winning field goal.
It's a rarity.
With all these guys that stink up the place. You know, and I've got a great friend of mine coaching special teams, so that's a third of the game.
Wow.
I'm taking Ryan Succop of the Tennessee Titans.
The defensive
he
coach.
Kicked it through the upright.
The defensive coach takes a kicker.
I don't care how far it was. He made it, and he helped his team win.
All right, I'm going to tell you right now, that took a lot for a defensive coach. Hey. To take a kicker.
Well, Coach, well, I'm going to
blare. Every other kicker is choked. Yeah. Every other kicker kicked the right, left, backwards.
I'm going to tell you, Coach, that defense wins championships.
I like that.
You like that?
This is game two.
Yeah.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
All right. I'm going to go with Colts linebacker, rookie linebacker Darius Leonard. He had 18 tackles, a sack, and a forced fumble, and they held the Washington Redskins out of the end zone.
That's putting in where that's impressive.
That's all right. They just said that one to me on my ear. No, they didn't.
I like that.
All right, so let's move ahead to week three then, Jeff. I want everyone here now to give a lock of the week and a shock of the week, okay? All right, Jeff, for you, your lock?
Well, I think I'm going to take Minnesota against Buffalo as the lock of the week. McCoy's, you know, dinged up and hurt, and the Bills are just reeling. So I'm going to take the Vikes. I think that's one of the better football teams in the National Football League right now.
We're literally all scribbling out our locks now because I definitely had that one. So I
had the Vikings too. It screamed, take me. You know, now, just to be fair, Jeff didn't look on my paper. He's way in Canada.
Fair enough. And in keeping with the Buffalo Bills, Jeff is going to retire at the end of this next segment. So he's not going to finish the game. All right, Jeff, give me a... So you both going that game for your lock?
Yeah.
Rob, a lock for you?
Well, you know, McDermott might be calling plays for Bills defense.
So?
Anyway, I'll take the Vikings in a rout.
All right. I'm going to have
Vikings
to pick...
also?
Let me pick something different then.
In a rout.
How about... I'm going to say, have you got one? You're helping me out, Solly. You're helping me out.
I'm just moving it as a coach.
Okay, I think Jacksonville's defense, Jacksonville at home against Tennessee. Tennessee is still down their two offensive tackles against that defense.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going Jags. That's my lock. Jeff, give us a shock.
Get ready. All you got to do is look at Solomon and look how he is attired today in the colors of
my goodness.
In the colors of the team that will win in New York, the Cleveland
Browns.
Wow. That's a good call there, Jeff.
Jeff's definitely looking at my notes.
You know,
I had that one as well.
He knows it. He's good.
Jeffrey,
man.
Copying in class.
Nice.
All right, Solomon, give us your shock.
Hey, listen, the Washington Redskins, remember week one, we was like surprisingly, they are a good football team. I still believe they're a good football team. They didn't show up week two. But I think they show up week three at home against the Green Bay Packers. I'm going to take the Washington Redskins.
All right. One of the things you should never do when making a television show is turn to Rob Ryan and say, give me a shock.
Well, I'll tell you what. In the tail of the tape in this fight for L.A., I'm taking the toughest coach in the league, Anthony Lynn, to shock the world.
Yeah, if they beat the Rams, that would be a shock.
It's a shock.
All right, well, I actually was going to go with the Browns, but would you give me, although they're 2-0, will you give me Cincinnati winning at Carolina as a shock? You take that as a shock?
No, I take that as a shock on the road.
Shock wave.
Yeah, I mean.
Jeff, you having that?
That'd be a tremor. That wouldn't be a shock. That'd be a tremor.
Hey, you guys all just picked the Vikings to beat the Bills. At least I'm trying to mix it up. All right, we're going to take a quick break here on Inside the Huddle. When we come back, we're going to talk Carson Wentz and a little bit of Fitzmagic. Yes, welcome back to Inside the Huddle. A reminder what we've got coming up for you on Sky Sports on Sunday. We're on air at 5 p.m., starting with New Orleans at Atlanta. Then it's the battle for Los Angeles, the Rams at the Chargers. Sunday Night Football is New England at Detroit. And Monday Night Football is Pittsburgh at the 2-0 Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Yes, so unlike the Buffalo Bills, we're going to play hard for the entire hour. So we're still here with you on Inside the Huddle. Rob Ryan, Solomon Wilcox, Jeff Reinbold. One of the big stories, of course, coming up in week three, and Eagles fans will be so pleased, is the return of Carson Wentz. Solomon, he hasn't played since week 14 of 2017. He was on for an MVP season at quarterback. And he's going to be back this weekend. Obviously, he tore his knee ligaments. He's going to be back this weekend at home against Indianapolis.
But, you know, I think Eagles fans are going to be patient with Carson Wentz. They know how good he is, and he is better than Nick Foles. And I know a lot of people may say, hey, Nick won him a Super Bowl, but they're not there. They're not getting home field advantage without the presence of Carson Wentz. He's a heady quarterback. Remember, he won two Division II championships at North Dakota State when he was in college. He understands the pro-style game. He has a good feel for defenses. He's been a guy who's been very athletic in terms of his ability to move around. So it'll be different. It'll be interesting to see how differently he plays the game coming off that knee injury.
Jeff, you've seen him on the practice field. I've watched him on the practice field. He's physically very, very impressive. When we had the kickoff event on Piccadilly at the start of the season, Ron Jaworski, the Eagles legend, was over, and he was talking about being at Carson Wentz's pro day. And he said Carson Wentz trotted out onto the field, and he said it was like the weather changed. It was an impressive thing. You know, the sun came out and everyone kind of gravitated towards him. And even if he's not the perfect physical specimen this weekend, his teammates will rally around him. He's got a special presence about him, hasn't he?
I don't think there's any question about that, Neil. He's got that it factor that the great quarterbacks have. When I watched him on the practice field last summer, against the Dolphins, I walked up to Doug Peterson. I said, how do you like your young quarterback? And he said, let me tell you something. He is really special. And he said he's a little hard-headed, but he's really special. And I think not only his teammates, the city of Philadelphia, the fan base, Eagle Nation, everybody is going to rise up now when that kid gets an opportunity to go back on the field and play.
Rob, we were sat in this studio last year. We did a game between the Eagles and the Broncos, and the Eagles blew out the Broncos. And I remember you, when we weren't on air, you were kind of watching and almost purring. You said some of the stuff Carson Wentz was doing was really next-level stuff in terms of attacking a defense. Tell us what you meant by some of that.
Oh, yeah, I mean, because he could beat you a ton of different ways. He can beat you with his head because he's one of the smartest quarterbacks in the league. He doesn't have the most experience, but that doesn't matter. He's got the great athleticism, the big arm. He can run. He's a leader like you guys have just documented. I mean, this guy is special. He was a clear-cut, not even close MVP.
Yeah.
He didn't play the last three, 4 weeks, and he should have still won the MVP last year. Like, this guy's special. I know they can't wait to get him back out there. I mean, you know, I know they're missing DeFilippo because they haven't got any offense at all since he's left. But Carson Wentz is the real guy you need.
Do you let him run? Yeah. Because he got hurt running.
I think you just let him play his game.
Okay.
Even if you go back to that, I think it was week 13. They're out and they're playing the Rams. Both teams, I think, were undefeated or at least close to it. It was an epic game. It was a big game on the NFL schedule. He injured his knee and continued to play. He had blew out his ACL.
He threw the two-pointer after
that. He continued to play.
Yeah.
That wins people over in our football family and in our fraternity. Boy, that's when you know he's a gamer. For me, he kind of reminds me of an Andrew Luck. Big body, strong arm guy who plays the game in a gritty, grimy way. He doesn't mind getting physical because he came to play football.
But, Jeff, the problem with that, and you're a coach, you try and balance it, or do you try and balance it? Because Solomon's right. You want to let them play their natural game, but Andrew Luck's been out for a year until, you know, there's a big hit that can come any moment if you play that way.
Well, you know, I'm going to just say good luck because I don't think you're going to change that kid. He's grown up since he was a small boy to form that personality. And to say that now all of a sudden you're going to go out and you're going to, you know, they're going to tell him to slide. They're going to tell him to protect himself. They're going to do all those things. But Solomon will tell you, and same will Rob, when you get in the heat of competition, when you are competing, you go back to who you are. And he is a competitor first. And I don't expect he's going to take any plays off.
As we welcome back Carson Wentz, of course, we bid a farewell to Nick Foles, and what a relief effort it was for Nick Foles. He went 6-2 in relief of Carson Wentz, a passer rating of 92.7. He was the Super Bowl MVP. Rob, in a way, Eagles fans won't ever want to see Nick Foles play another snap for them because it means Carson Wentz is healthy and he's succeeding. But he'll also never have to buy another drink in that town. I mean, they're going to love that run that Nick Foles put together, and no one can ever take that away from him.
Right. I mean, the biggest thing is, you know, you're a team. You're a team of 53 guys, and he's part of that, and he was a big part of it. of the success. I mean, shoot, Drew Bledsoe was replaced by Tom Brady the year I won my first Super Bowl with the Patriots, and he came in and helped us win the AFC Championship game to get to the Super Bowl after you've been on the bench forever, you know, after you've recovered from the injury. So it takes a team of everybody. Everybody has roles that are important. Nick Foles always has a role right now behind Wentz until, you know, he moves on as a starter somewhere. So it's an important role. Everybody has their job to do, and he did a heck of a job.
And there's no friction between these two as well. I think back to Joe Montana and Steve Young in San Francisco, two legendary quarterbacks. They didn't get along behind the scenes to the point where one time Joe Montana had Steve Young round to his house for dinner, and Joe Montana's daughter said, "Daddy, is this the quarterback we don't like?" Right at the dinner table. But there is none of that with these two.
No, they both are very quality young men. Mm. Just to kind of give you an idea, Nick Foles will tell you that he was on his way to quitting football.
Yeah, he was.
And Andy Reid talked him into giving it another shot. Then the Eagles, of course, brought him back. Carson Wentz is a likable young man. Mm. I think Nick Foles knows his role, but he also knows, just like you said, he's done something in life that no one can ever take away from him. He's won a championship. 30 years from now, when they have the reunion, he will be there. And so I think they understand that by supporting one another, it makes both of them better. It makes the team better.
Now, the Philadelphia Eagles have the 24th-ranked offense in the NFL. That's what Carson Wentz is coming in to try and kickstart. The number one offense in total yards, passing yards, and yards per play belongs to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And this has been an incredible story. Ryan Fitzpatrick, through the first 2 weeks, has been red hot, not just on the field, but in the post-match press conference. Let's have a look at how Fitzmagic turned up after Sunday's win over the Eagles.
I think we just developed a lot of confidence in the offseason and through training camp with how we worked and the way things were going and the rapport with the guys. I think that confidence has carried over into the season.
I got your friends there.
Hey, DJ. I got like two more because DJ needs his stuff back.
Wait a minute, you mean
I borrowed your stuff. Sorry. Yeah, I borrowed your stuff. Sorry, Deshaun.
What is yours? Is any of that yours or is that?
The chest hair is mine.
I must just point out for our podcast only listeners, please go and check out the footage. Ryan Fitzpatrick channeling his inner Conor McGregor. But Jeff, he's a great story. Fitzpatrick is 35 and in his 14th season, but the bigger story is going to be surely what the Bucs do for the rest of this season, because Deshaun Jackson has already gone on record saying, well, you can't take the hot hand out of the game. What do the Bucs do here?
Well, do you like winning? That's my question. I'm telling you, this guy is playing with house money right now. You know, you're talking about a veteran who's just playing loose and free, and he's got a great chemistry with the team, with his teammates. They are on a roll, Neil. I cannot, in my wildest imaginations, believe that Dirk Cutter would put Jameis Winston back in control of this thing.
Do you agree?
Oh, I totally agree. And one thing that people, we kind of lose sight of this, that it is a game. Mm. It's called football, but it's still a game. And the fun part of it, you've got to find a way to make it fun because it's hard.
Yes, you like that, right? That's going to be in the meeting room the next day.
I've been around Ryan Fitzpatrick. Mm. I've seen him with other teams. That is his style of leadership. Mm. He brings the level of productivity up of the players that are around him, but then the load is very light.
Yeah.
He puts it all on himself. He plays streaky now. He can be a little streaky, but his personality never changes. And I think that's very refreshing for the media there in Tampa covering the team, but it's also refreshing for the players in the locker room.
Let's broaden this out then beyond the rest of this season. If we feel like they're going to go with Fitzpatrick because he's the hot hand, Jameis Winston in three seasons has delivered 18 wins. He was the first overall pick in the draft. They picked up his fifth-year option, Rob, but they can cut him before March and they won't have to pay him the $20.9 million for next season. If he gets injured at some point this season and he's not available come March to pass a physical, they're on the hook for the money. Is there any way this amazing run from Fitzpatrick is signaling the end, complete end, of Jameis Winston in Tampa?
Well, I think so. I mean, if Fitzpatrick plays the entire season like this, absolutely it's the end for Jameis Winston in Tampa. But, you know, it's going to be hard to play this well through all that schedule. Now, he just got through beating the Super Bowl champions. It's not like he did it against a Buffalo or somebody. I mean, this guy has done a great job. But make no mistake about it, I think Jameis Winston is a young and upcoming quarterback, and I think he'll be a very successful quarterback in the National Football
League. I think when you look at the body of work of Ryan Fitzpatrick, again, I said he's streaky. There's ups and downs. It's like a stock market ticker, you know. That's what his career has been like. Yep. I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers will look at the extensive body of work with his career, and they'll say that's who he really is.
But could he be a bridge quarterback?
Well, that's what I think. That's what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. He will get it done for now. But I think what this does is it buys leverage for the team when it's time to negotiate the long-term deal with Jameis Winston. So essentially what you have is Ryan Fitzpatrick is for now, but the future does belong to Jameis Winston.
Jeff, do you agree that the future in Tampa belongs to Jameis? Because he's had some off-the-field issues that haven't exactly endeared him to management there.
Now, remember who we're talking about here. We're talking about the Glazers, right? And they throw money around like manhole covers. Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't spend a lot of money. And if, you know, it could be a situation where they cut him for financial reasons. There's so much that's going to play into this, right? Who's available in the draft? Where you're going to draft from? Free agency? All of it. But it's great speculation right now. I hope Jameis Winston learns from this experience and he takes the lesson that Fitzpatrick is teaching him about being a pro, how to approach the game, all of those kinds of things.
It's interesting how coaches set up their players. They want them to be leaders. So like Jameis Winston, it's a natural thing, isn't it, for the quarterback position? I just get your take quickly on this, guys. Adam Gase, the Miami Dolphins coach, picked his own captains this week. I don't know if you saw that. Adam Gase, normally it's a player vote. And I think Gase was saying, I want to control my leaders, maybe learning from last year.
No, I like it when a coach says, hey, here's the guy I'm investing in. Mm. Because he does the things and all the things I want in the way that I want them done. So players have a different criteria for maybe how they pick the captains. But I think coaches maybe have their finger on the pulse of their team in terms of who they would like to be captain.
Yeah, I think Gase has done that already in the offseason. He is a wonderful team there.
Yeah.
They're all going in the same direction. Gase has put that all together, and Gase now put the captains in there. No shock there. He's getting the guy. He's getting production from a team that is all fighting in the same direction.
All right, good stuff. My thanks to Jeff Reinbold. Get back to your game of darts, Jeff. Solomon Wilcox, Rob Ryan, thanks for joining us on Inside Huddle. Make sure you join us in our studios Sunday, 5 p.m. We'll see you then. Welcome back to our podcast-only section of Inside the Huddle, where myself and Jeff Reinbold make our picks. Jeff, you have a two-game lead.
It's early.
It's very early, absolutely. So let's start with Thursday night football. The New York Jets at the Cleveland Browns. I'm going to pick Cleveland here, Jeff. What about you?
Yeah, I'm with you. I went out and said that on the other aspect of the show. I think the Browns are at that point now, and big step back by the Jets last week.
Yeah, mistakes from Sam Darnold. I think the Browns are there or thereabouts. They've just got to find a way to finish. So we both like the Browns in that one. Moving on to our first game on Sky Sports on Sunday, New Orleans at Atlanta. Jeff, it's in Atlanta. These two teams don't like each other. I'm going Falcons. They fixed their red zone woes last week.
Well, it was good to see them score some in the red zone. They still got to find a way to get Julio the ball more, I think, Neil. But, you know, it was progress. It was at least they're getting touchdowns in the red zone. They've got a nasty defense. I'm going to take the Falcons.
All right, moving on to Denver at Baltimore. This is a tricky one, Jeff. Denver at Baltimore because Denver 2-0, but they've been kind of up and down. I'm going to go Baltimore at home. What about you?
I'm going to take Baltimore at home also. I think that, just too inconsistent right now on offense for the Broncos.
All right, let's move on to Cincinnati at Carolina. Jeff, Cam Newton, through 2 weeks, is the Panthers' leading rusher. Have they got to get Christian McCaffrey going on the ground? He had 14 catches last week.
Yeah, that offensive line has been problematic, Neil. They just can't seem to knock anybody off the ball. And when your quarterback is even as quarterback is athletic and as good as Cam Newton is your leading rusher, you've got some issues. He can't do that the whole year and hold up. So, again, I'm going to take Cincinnati in that one.
Yeah, I fancy Cincinnati on the road as well with their pass rush. Their offensive line is improved, and I think the Panthers are a bit too banged up. So moving on to the New York Giants at Houston. Jeff, I'm worried if I'm a Texans fan because they played against Tennessee last week. Tennessee were without Marcus Mariota, their top three offensive tackles, and Delanie Walker at tight end, and Houston still couldn't get the job done. This is a tough one to call because the Giants have been pretty shoddy, but I'm going to pick the Giants to win.
Yeah, you know what, Neil? This is two teams that desperately, and I mean desperately, need wins. The Giants' offense was frustrating to me the other night watching them against Dallas. I think Houston's in total disarray, and I'm going to take the Giants in this one.
All right, both going Giants to win that one. Everything the same so far. Moving on to Tennessee at Jacksonville. I really like what the Jacksonville Jaguars are doing and building. I think they were actually better on offense without Leonard Fournette. It might be something they can look at going forward to be a bit more balanced. I'm definitely taking them to win at home. What do you think?
Well, they were more diversified, and I thought Blake Bortles played really well. You know, again, everybody wants to hate that guy, but he's starting to win, and that's the bottom line for every quarterback. I'm going to take Jacksonville.
All right, let's move on to San Francisco at Kansas City. This is actually Patrick Mahomes' first start at Arrowhead Stadium. He played on the road in Week 17 last year and then two games on the road to start. I mean, I like what the 49ers are building, but the Chiefs have got something special, I think. Jeff, I'm going Kansas City.
High-octane offense, Neil. They can outscore anybody they play. There's so many playmakers on. You could take four of those wide receivers and make a 4x100 team and put it in Olympic Games, probably win a bronze medal. So they are tough to contain. Even though their defense struggles, I think they'll win.
All right, both going Chiefs. Let's move on to Oakland at Miami. And again, very quietly, the Dolphins are showing some steel. They're showing some toughness, and they're getting just enough, you know, really good throws some of the time out of Ryan Tannehill. I mean, there's some stuff to like there. I've got to see them beating Oakland at home. I think in South Florida, I think Miami take this one.
Yeah, I'm going to say something now. The Raiders, you talk about a team that needs a win, Neil. I mean, all that stuff with Khalil Mack, you're not playing well. There's supposed to be friction with the quarterback. I mean, this is a big one for Johnny Gruden. So I'm going to say the Raiders will go down there and shock them.
Wow. All right. Nice. What one different now? You're going Oakland, I'm going Miami. I think we'll both go the same on this one. Buffalo at Minnesota.
Next.
Yeah. What do you make of the... Jeff, so we're both picking Minnesota. Tell me what you made of Vontae Davis retiring at halftime.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to ask you that very same question too. You know, I got mixed feelings about it, Neil. Obviously, you know, from a teammate standpoint and from a, you know, as a coach and all those other things, you just think, God, what a terrible way to desert your team at halftime and all stuff. But then on the other hand, you got to remember, this is not, you know, this isn't tennis. This isn't soccer. This is a hard game and it's physical. And it sounded to me like in his release that the injury thing and the fear of being hurt was what played into it. And I can understand that part of it.
Yeah, I 100% can understand that because if you're hurt and you got your rest of your life to live, I just think, Jeff, then fake a hamstring injury. Tell them you've got a headache. You're always going to be known as the guy who retired at halftime now.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. And again, you know, it's really a shame because Vontae Davis has been a very good player in the National Football League. Mm. And to go out like that and to have that stamp that he'll never be able to take off of him, it's going to cloud his legacy.
All right, let's move on to a few more games. Indianapolis at Philadelphia. So I think we established in the main part of what we were talking about earlier, Carson Wentz is not going to be 100%, but I'm going to take Philadelphia, I think, on the road, although I do like some of the signs of life with the Colts defense. This is in Philly.
That young linebacker is really special, and you know, I think they're making progress. Marcus Hunt's starting to play a little bit for him. And, you know, but I just think that Philadelphia, when you took a look at the total rosters of the two teams and the fact Carson Wentz is going to play, they'll get that little emotional lift. So I'm going to take the Eagles.
All right. Green Bay at Washington. I think we saw Adrian Peterson come back down to earth a little bit. 11 carries for 20 yards last week. Green Bay kind of blew it at the end, but they've still got Aaron Rodgers, one leg or not. I'm going Green Bay to win.
Yeah, I agree with you, Neil. I just the Skins have not played well for 2 weeks in a row. I think they're better than they're playing, but you know, again, you got to go with Aaron Rodgers. It's hard for me to go in against Aaron Rodgers.
All right, we've only gone one difference so far, Jeff, and I need to kind of try and catch up on you. So I know it's early, so I'm going to let you pick first now. Chargers and Rams.
You know better than ask me that question. My guy is Sean McVay. I got to go with those Rams. I got Wade on one side, Sean McVay on the other. Come on, Neil.
All right. Well, I'm a Wade Phillips guy as well, so I'm going Rams as well with you there. Chicago at Arizona. I mean, the Cardinals have fallen hard and fast. There's no way I can see them beating the Chicago Bears even at home. I'm going Bears to win that one.
Come on. I dare you. Take the Cardinals.
No, you take them. You take them.
Scribble it out and take the Cardinals.
No, you take them. I've written it down already.
I wouldn't take the Cardinals to lunch.
Oh, all right. We're both taking Chicago. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to pick the Seattle Seahawks to get their first win. They're at home against Dallas.
Woo!
You like that?
What?
You like that one? How do you like them onions?
You're channeling Kirk Cousins. You like that?
Yeah, woo, do you? Are you going?
Oh, I know. Did you watch the Seahawks the other night?
Well, I watched some of it, yeah.
Neil, Jermaine Ifedi has a sprained neck from watching the pass rushers run by him so fast.
He's only got a face to Marcus Lawrence.
Yeah, oh boy, that's a day. I think the Giants have a pretty good offensive line, and that Cowboy front just chewed them up.
You going Dallas?
I'm going Dallas.
All right, you're getting on me for picking Seattle. You just said the Giants got a good offensive line. You've seen Eric Flowers play, right?
Well, Eric Flowers is a Hall of Famer compared to Jermaine Ifedi.
Fair point. Sunday night football, New England at Detroit. I'm going to go New England to win on the road.
Yeah, New England. Detroit is struggling. Offensively, they just look totally out of sync.
All right, and finally, Monday night football. It's Pittsburgh at Tampa Bay. I think Tampa Bay's big play offense is going to scare the living daylights out of the Steelers, Jeff, but desperation can do wonderful things. I think Pittsburgh get the win. Who do you like?
I like Pittsburgh, but I'm going to tell you, Neil, if they don't win, it could be, you know, a bad, bad year in Pittsburgh.
All right, good stuff, Jeff. Just to let you know, Jermaine Ifedi is waiting outside your office door, so we probably got to wrap this up. Go in low and hard, Jeff.
All I know is I'll be able to get past him.
Fair point. Good stuff, Jeff. Until next time, say goodbye to the good folks.
Aloha.